Oh my goodness, in 30 years, you know? So we're 30 years behind them and working on research, developing. Imagine the progress they might have made in China, Russia, in 30 years, coming up with new, more ingenious nuclear weapons. They're very good at keeping secrets, much better than we are. And this is just the stuff we know about that is leaked into their open literature that they've written about. I'm sure there are other things they've got that we haven't even that we have perhaps haven't even imagined that they've managed to develop. So this is the nature of Soviet and Russian nuclear strategy and how it has evolved. Probably we actually face in the aftermath of the Cold War, I fear, a greater threat of nuclear war now than we did during the Cold War, because in the Russian war plans, you know, they're even more dependent on nuclear weapons and relying on them even more heavily. And you can see it in Syria. It isn't being reported in the Western newspapers, and it's disgraceful that it's not. In part, it's also because the Western reporters are so ignorant that they, you know, only rely on what the Obama administration tells them, and they don't do their own research. But Putin has sent the Moskva to Syria. You know, this is a guided missile cruiser that's armed with tactical nuclear weapons. In the face-off, or what people thought was going to be a face-off, they've got a nuclear-armed guided missile cruiser down there at the port of Tartus. And they've also, it was reported, are sending the Yuriy Dolgorukiy, which is one of their new ballistic missile submarines, to make a port call to Syria, the port of Tartus. That missile, that ballistic missile submarine, can reach the United States from Syria. I think what Putin is saying to us, and maybe this is why Obama has backed off and is letting the Syrians be slaughtered and is retreating for the Middle East, he's putting the nuclear cards on the table in the Middle East and saying to the United States, I'm putting my nuclear cards on the table. What are you raising me? Are you going to meet me and raise me? What are you going to do? What we're doing is retreating.
As an expert on national security issues, you have often appeared on television and the radio. In addition, you have also written many books on national security issues, such as Apocalypse Unknown, The Struggle to Protect America from End Electromagnetic Pulse Catastrophe, Electric Armageddon, Civil Preparedness for an Electromagnetic Pulse Catastrophe, War Scare Russia and America on the Nuclear Brink, Nuclear Wars, Exchanges and Outcomes, The Strategic Nuclear Balance and Why It Matters, along with Israel's Nuclear Arsenal. In addition, the BBC made your book, War Scare, Russia and America on the Nuclear Brink, into a 2-hour documentary. Another one of your books, Electric Armageddon, Civil Preparedness for an Electromagnetic Pulse Catastrophe, was the basis for another TV documentary, which was made by the National Geographic. What is the best advice you can provide to the youth interested in pursuing a career in security matters, such as cybersecurity, terrorism, and critical infrastructure issue developments?
Well, first I'd recommend that people take an interest in history and study history, because I think history is the best preparation for a secure a career in national security. I know that's counter to what a lot of people in universities say. They'll tend to encourage people to go into political science, or even into courses that specialize in national security, like arms control and the like. And I do agree, one should take the courses on arms control if you can find them in universities. Universities, unfortunately, tend to be very liberal in their orientations, and oftentimes they don't offer strategic studies programs. But that's another good reason to study history, because almost every university will teach at least that. Why do I think history is the best preparation? Basically, in all the fields you're talking about, the fundamental problem is to think about what might be and what could go wrong and what can we do to prevent that? And I think there's no better preparation for that than what has actually happened in the past. The kinds of failures, the way wars have happened in the past, what has happened, what has gone wrong, you'll find when you study history, is wilder than the wildest conceptions that a science fiction writer might be able to come up with. You know, it's so astonishing how wars have happened in the past, the little things that have sometimes escalated into wars. Who would have imagined a novelist who submitted a novel that said a world war could happen because a terrorist shot some archduke, you know, one bullet, would escalate into a global war that would end Victorian civilization, would probably be considered so wild and implausible that that no one would publish it. But that is actually what happened in World War One, you know. And these things, the theoretical constructs that you get from international relations courses or strategic studies courses, arms control courses, where we think theoretically. See, these people don't, their orientation is not toward history, but it is toward a, almost the way Plato would have done it. Let us think theoretically about what could be the world as it might be. Let's think of what the worst case world we can imagine, and then think of ways we can fix that world. There are values in that. But history proves that our imaginations aren't powerful enough or good enough to come up with what really can go wrong, how bad it can really get. Also, sometimes, how easy the solutions can be as well. That is also amazing how in history, how oftentimes with such little foresight and little effort, the worst can sometimes be prevented. So that's why I guess the first step toward that is studying history. Then, of course, you've got to take those courses if they're available to you. Strategic studies, international relations, because those are the degrees that if you want a job in those fields, cybersecurity forces, cybersecurity, that tends to be technical. You're going to have to go into computer science and become computer science experts and things of that sort. But I hope that people don't limit themselves to simply becoming a computer science expert, and that kind of may have come out in this conversation of ours. Cybersecurity, too, the most important aspect is not in the electronic area, in the technological details of cyber theory. I think the most exciting and the most important part are happening in the larger strategic world. You know, how Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, terrorists have this conception of cyber warfare that is so different from ours, where it's integrated with physical sabotage, with non-nuclear radio frequency weapons, with the weather, and with nuclear EMP attack, the ultimate cyber weapon. I think it's very important for the cyber warrior to be able to think strategically too, and to have this historical background, so that he can have metaphors for what he's doing. What are the analogies between, in presentations I was giving yesterday where you were, I tried to draw an analogy between the German Nazi Germany's Blitzkrieg strategy, which nearly conquered Western civilization, and cyber warfare as it's conceived by our adversaries today. It's useful. History is much richer than the best imaginations can be, I think, for reaching back and finding metaphors and analogies for the threats we face and the possible solutions, that we are seeking. You know, is cyber warfare like the Blitzkrieg? Is it like perhaps some other strategy, some other revolution in military affairs? What is our response like to it, and what are the appropriate responses to it? The most important thing is to learn to think strategically, I think. And studying history, studying international relations theory, studying arms control, thinking about these things, all of these are exercises to try to teach you to think strategically. Ultimately, that's the most important thing, to understand the big picture, you know, where history is going. The most important decisions are those decisions, you know, and those are the decisions you want to impact. If you choose a career in that, I think you want to be part of the solution, part a soldier who helps keep Western civilization safe and alive, to help it recover from these terrible threats that we face, but most importantly, to try to prevent them from happening in the first place. And a soldier who understands the big picture, you know, is going to be much more useful and has a chance of becoming a general than the soldier who doesn't have that perspective and can't think strategically and is just going to be a tool for other people to follow orders. Don't be narrow and become let yourself become a cog in a wheel. That just helps make us vulnerable. One of the great strengths of freedom and of the free world, precisely that historically, even our foot soldiers, the guys who had to shoulder a musket, you know, the soldier in the battlefield, the reason he fights as a free man and has chosen to fight is that he does understand the big picture. And that provides him not just with the motivation, because he understands the value of what he's doing, but these guys often figure out the tactics and strategy at the small unit level, that can make all the difference in the world. If you were looking, and let's use a metaphor here, let's go back to World War II and Nazi Germany. You know, we're used to thinking of World War II as being won in the West by Franklin Roosevelt and Winston Churchill and guys like General Patton, okay? And it's true that we probably wouldn't have won the war if we hadn't had a Churchill and a Patton and a Roosevelt at that time and place. But they weren't sufficient to win the war. The people, and I think they would agree, I know they would agree, you know, because they were champions of freedom. The people who really won the war and the people that were necessary to win the war were the free people who actually fought on the battlefield and applied the ingenuity that only free men have, the ability to think freely, the confidence that I'm going to think for myself in this situation. There was a GI phrase called FUBAR that stood for something like ump, but yeah, I can't remember what the last part was. But FUBAR was a constant refrain in almost all military operations because they knew that no matter how well the brains above them had tried to plan it out, that something was going to go wrong. And always something went wrong. And then they were able to figure out, you know, how to do a better job.